Sheepdog Rest Stop number 3.
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh, North Carolina. Here we are.
Yeah.
So, Steve Pender, Brian Bray on the mics.
Yep.
Maddie's here in the background. She might be throwing out some comments or questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we met through the Sheepdog. Was it Sheepdog or through? Probably through Kurt. Right?
Probably through Kurt, yeah.
Yeah, just having conversations and posts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably enjoyed each other's insights. That's kind of what the new world is like, right?
Kinda. Yeah, just smart people trying to find each other and get on the same path of following the truth.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of smart people that aren't, I guess they still think the media is a reliable source of truth.
And right.
We're learning it's not.
Yeah. You said something last night that was important, kind of around the 3% that we, when we're finding or putting efforts towards, we don't have to worry about the folks that just really aren't clued in. They're kind of like the 80% in the Revolutionary War that just didn't participate.
Yeah.
They didn't care the outcome as long as it didn't really affect their way of life.
Yeah, ultimately, what matters is the what I call fighting vectors. People that are, you either have to worry about or are willing to, defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
against tyranny. That's who matters ultimately, in terms of convincing and spending time.
You think we're getting natural outreach to them at this point? Is there anything that we need to do to either accelerate or broaden our reach? Or
it's kind of tough because as long as Trump appears to be doing something, we either need to let them know that he's not doing enough matters.
Well, maybe we have the fighting age males, and then there's, quote, the networking age females that can, through a degree of truth and understanding what kind of commons we're trying to build. That's one of the challenges I see with proprietarianism is largely male-dominated. Very few mm-hmm. women kind of understand
the value concept. The ones that are in it.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe there's an outreach. I've always encouraged Maddie to participate and try to find more like kind.
Yeah.
And it's sad that we have to, quote, find like kind, that this was previously our default, and our default was really good, and it worked really well until it didn't.
Yeah, I'd say late 1800s, early 1900s was probably the peak of Western civilization.
Yeah. And you collect some of the artwork from this time period at the mm-hmm. turn of 1800s and the 1900s.
Yeah, that confirmed it. Photography replaced the value of illustrators. But if you look at any magazine from, 1913 to 1929, you can see, how amazing, America and Europe were.
Yeah. And that's coming off of 1850-65 Civil War, where we killed mm-hmm. off 20-30% of our own American population, which was largely Northern Europeans.
Yeah.
Then we take another whack at it in 1917 to 1919.
It sure does look intentional when you look at it in retrospect, like periodic wars that killed off the best men, and then you have, Vietnam.
Yeah. How many alpha males got killed off? In that. So then the question is, they didn't have truth tests. I mean, America largely for World War I was a non-interventionist.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a twist in the media and some events, sinking of the Lusitania,
which
largely staged false flag.
Kind of. Yeah.
So I bring that up as in the sigh that I have is, dear God, what if it happens again? We get duped, or America gets duped. And as we said, it seems like 3%, if that, is awake. 10% maybe total can be to our cause, so to speak, rallied to our cause. But that means that we have the Pareto principle is still stretched. We need to get to 20%, I would say, for us to really have a strong effect, especially against a media that, like you said, is against us.
And maybe that's something very beneficial that Trump has done, is draw attention to the fake news media. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody else has talked about that before him. So right. You have a lot of people that are skeptical about anything the media says, and now we have the means with the internet and independent media to expose false narratives. And there's a lot of people that just don't trust the media. A lot more than maybe 10, 15 years ago.
And then, though, the counterpoint is with the censorship that's going on now, particularly for conservative voices, deplatforming, banning, multiple bans, demonetizing, mm-hmm. if that was their main source of income. So I know that some of our folks are looking at alternative social media networks, and we want to be able to stay connected. I like that part of it. There's a whole nother side. It's great to have the conversations and build the understanding, but as Bill would talk about, we need to have our in real life practices. So that comes back to meeting your neighbors, reforming community.
Knowing who you can trust.
Yeah. So maybe there's something that needs to show up to help bridge that gap.
Well, in our neighborhood, there's a site, nextdoor.com, mm-hmm. which kind of links communities. Do you have that in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Kind of get a better pulse on local people. Mm-hmm.
I thought that's mostly like classifieds for hyper-local classifieds. I don't know if you could start talking politics on there too much.
Yeah, I haven't used it extensively enough to.
I think an example is like Maddie and I road tripping. Now we have a connection of in real life and
in Raleigh, and
just by
wherever you've been.
Yeah, wherever we've been, and having conversations like this, folks that tune in say, "Oh, I'm not too far," and I'd like to connect with you, and because I think when people get it, obviously, it's like really waking up. Mm-hmm. Really waking up, being able to do truth tests, being able to understand incentives, race realism, scientific data, crunching through stuff, having opposing rally, ridicule, gossip, shame, and moralizing. I mean, some guys show up and they've been beat by that for a number of years, and they go, oh, that's what it is.
Yes, it's like getting people out of the mode of thinking like children into realizing that there's an even more adult way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that's inspiring that we're kind of like evangelicals in the most, the truest sense. Mm-hmm. We're advocating truth.
I don't see that you get too much into the spiritual conversations or the religious ones, if I recall. I know that Kurt's taken a whack at Christianity, or he kind of throws out all the Abrahamic religions for their lies and deceits and how they parasited. That, I guess the comment was that the really only value of Christianity was suppressing the underclasses. So that religion's main role was to take care of the lower class.
Yeah, the sins make them not. I can see that, yeah. It seems to make sense that. But in today's time, they kind of empower the underclasses.
Right.
Like they're very tolerant of. The transgender. I see these pride flags hanging from every church in this area. I don't know if you've seen driving around.
I've definitely seen the influence.
Yeah.
But not in a church.
Yeah.
You're saying that local churches here are now more open to the.
Yeah, at least in downtown Raleigh, you see. Maybe it was just for June, but. You couldn't imagine that 20 or 30 years ago.
Not even 5 or 10.
So it seems that they float more with the times than. It's almost like they're competing for customers. Mm-hmm. That they want to make sure that they can. That they don't go too off the. Mm-hmm. Too far away from what the media is saying is normal.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people will follow that because they trust the church.
But I'm sure there's plenty of churches that. Don't do it, and for that, you know, they have their loyal followers that.
It's probably the downtown, and that's why it's. And I think overall it's still a force for good. You know, a lot of, you go to the suburbs of Raleigh, and there's a lot of, you know, it's mostly homogeneous white communities, and they have their church no different than what their grandparents had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not gung-ho on this, they're more conservative. And basically the city, it's going to be cities versus the rural, cities versus the suburbs all across the world.
Yeah. How do you see that playing out in terms of the separation, successions?
Well, if anything happened to the cities, you have riots. I mean, everybody's talked about this for, I know Kurt has, and it's pretty well known.
Yeah, loss of food, supplies. They start to go into attack mode or take from others.
Parasites attack one another.
Yeah. So safety and shelter is out in the suburbs and the rural area.
It's a high cost of living inside the city once you don't have resources. Mm-hmm. You know, the production is not actually in the city, it's outside of it. Mm-hmm. So once you cut down the transportation capacity, the value actually is the surround.
Mm-hmm. Let's hit another hot button topic. You live in Raleigh, so this is an area that deals with a lot of
diversity.
Mm-hmm. How's that showing up?
Well, there's just some areas we don't go in, or we try to avoid. And we try to avoid gas stations after 10 o'clock.
Sure.
Nothing good happens at a gas station at night. That's something we always say.
But to be clear, there are other areas that are quite nice, have successfully a degree of diversity. So there's also a pool maybe from an economic, socioeconomic, where they're maintaining the commons collectively, even being diverse. And you have some examples. We did that yesterday over by Whole Foods.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that area is very non-diverse. That's probably why it's succeeding so well.
Oh, but the grocery store was.
Yeah.
So it brought in.
It's kind of at the at the hub of downtown. Well, let's see how to put this.
I think my point was around when you get to a socioeconomic level, it's kind of like Bill's description of separating the classes via the power of decision. So the upper class makes decisions that affect everybody downward. The middle class makes decisions that affect their family, maybe their employees, coworkers. To some degree, it just affects mostly their bubble, whereas the lower class has no decision-making power. Everything comes from above. So then it doesn't really have to do with money, status, power, fame, or anything. That this upper, middle, and lower class is all about the power of their decision-making. That was what makes it most upsetting when you have, quote, elites or those that are in the upper class that are making terrible decisions. Because their decisions are affecting everybody, including middle class and lower class. Middle class can go with it a little bit better. You know, okay, I'm going to figure out a different tax strategy, or now I'm going to move, or do we have a little bit more of that ability. So when we're sitting in Whole Foods and seeing a degree of diversity, like 80% white, 20% mixed, it's working, and I think it's working in this peaceful polity because the socioeconomic is putting everybody with a greater degree of agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also some selection bias, though, because, you know, black people who go to Whole Foods are, you know, not the average. And there's some gentrifying in Raleigh due to so many people moving in, that a lot of the what we call ghetto areas, like this neighborhood included, are becoming very sought after. There's a lot of 1960s houses that, and even some black people from out of town with, you know, high paying jobs are moving here. So I think that's possibly some of what we're seeing at Whole Foods.
You know, you bring up a good point, and this is something that I wanted to talk about. Both you and I are entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial in our life, that which there's a good part of it. It means that we're able to see value or seek out and spot value. And I know that this is specific to your capabilities of business. That being said, in this time, so we got times that are look like on a, you know, there's a storm on the horizon, so to speak. By having a good eye for seeking long-term value could pay out really well for any sheepdog or propertarian. So if they take a position and buy a 1960s Eichler and defend it, you know, they're in a real good position on the way out just as much, you know.
Yeah.
Wanted to speak to that because I know that Kurt laughs about he's looking forward to it because of the opportunity of enrichment in a war scenario. I don't think you have those same ideas, but you're not opposed to profiting from war.
Well, it's such a foreign way from our thinking in terms of, you know, we've never experienced that in our lifetime.
Right.
It's sort of plunder situation. But
right.
That's been kind of the norm in every war. You know, what really kind of sucks is that Detroit has went through this process, you know, all the, you know, the demographic change inherited a whole city of beautiful architecture.
And yeah, Detroit was largely Art Deco, right, if I know that. Well, I want to add a point here because sometimes it's great in terms of due diligence is to add a little bit to the background. One of the things that I heard about Detroit is that we meaning America, was totally kicking ass in the auto industry, and Detroit was obviously flourishing from that.
Yeah.
The muscle cars, you know, the heyday of the 50s to the 60s and 70s of muscle cars was just on fire. Now, there was a little country in the Middle East that attacked Saudi Arabia. I think they call it the Six-Day War.
Yeah, and then oil prices went up. And
know those oil prices that skyrocketed, what do you think they did to the Detroit auto industry?
Yeah,
it ruined. And those muscle cars.
And then Japan's higher mileage cars started becoming more favorable. And then the cars started becoming very ugly over here.
Yeah.
To compete with that.
So this little tiny geopolitical war that we probably should have had nothing to do with from our greatest ally ended up destroying the Detroit auto industry.
Yeah, oil embargo.
Yep. Those lines through the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that cool to have a muscle car anymore.
Nope.
So anyway, that's to add to the death of Detroit.
Yeah, another facet that actually probably cost us, you know, trillions of dollars in the long run.
Right.
Is from our favoritism of Israel.
Yeah. So in the quote war that ensued that destroyed Detroit, there was also a demographic. A lot of blacks in the area also continued. If I read it right, there was continuous fires. Like the firefighters just got fatigued and exhausted because they kept burning neighborhoods down.
Yeah. Even now, I mean, I watch, there's a YouTuber, Graham Stevens, like they went through Detroit looking for investment opportunities.
Yeah.
And in one of the neighborhoods, there was like a fire overnight at one of the houses.
That they had
not one they were interested in, but in the same neighborhood.
Right.
So it's still that common. So there's still plundering going on just without somebody intelligent enough to take advantage of to retain the value. They didn't retain the value.
But is it possible to retain value in a demographic that doesn't retain value or build commons? Is that something you just write off? You can't short real estate. You can't make money on the way down.
No. I guess you could salt the earth if you're... No, that's not worth it.
That tends to make the value of real estate around it go up because you now destroy inventory. So now supply-demand is... But that demographic's going to move and go...
The lesson is to guard against the destruction of... Like, demographic change seems to be such a clear, when you look at the data, destruction of huge, you know, real estate property is a liability, you know, it requires maintenance. So a lot of the value is in simply maintaining it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
If you, racial demographic change has probably cost, you know, several trillion dollars in real estate alone just by lack of maintenance.
Right.
That's a plunder that has to be guarded against at a community level.
So if someone was seeking value, they would then go look to a community or an area where they're going to buy in that already has a demographic that's favorable for maintaining.
Yeah, because your community will maintain it sufficiently that your value won't go to zero eventually.
I guess the only exception to that is a gentrification. It's when an area has been decided that it's been abandoned to some degree. There is a value that's in it if we can bring the commons back.
Yeah, I wonder how much technology has to do with that. Like, maybe it becomes, at some point it becomes much easier to, like, for instance, security cameras now. You know, everybody has them. We have doorbell cameras. We can keep tabs on anyone trying to ruin our neighborhood, which allows for more gentrification opportunities. And it may have been that, you know, some change in the building industry, making it cheap enough to renovate houses, was the catalyst. I'm not aware of, but security cameras is the big thing now.
Yeah,
that allows for, you know, accountability on anyone that wants to destroy your property.
So stacking a couple of the ideas together. So it's a white demographic, rural, making sure that they're maintaining. They'd look for. Remember, we were driving through Virginia, Floyd, Virginia, and on the way out, I noticed that their houses had great lawns around them, all well-maintained, and they didn't have any clutter, like a storage of this and a stack pile on all the kids' toys all over the place. We're driving through, and I was just consistently, like, I don't think I found but one that had some tin roof that was maybe even on the way out to be thrown out. So that's a great example that I've seen recently.
Floyd, Virginia?
Yeah, Floyd, Virginia.
Yeah. It's like it's a fractal problem to the bigger problem of society, and the family and the homestead and the neighborhood is where everybody can exert their own influence in real estate investing. And that's... if anybody wants to get involved in that, that's one way you can make a big change.
Mm-hmm. Would you seek communities that have higher families? So could that, I mean...
all know, things being equal, that being the... yeah?
I mean, obviously having a local militia, I think, is important. Having a vaccine exemption, no police state kind of... I mean, there's a number of things that obviously would... be deal killers right away. But if I was trying to fine tune, I was thinking maybe if they already have kind of larger white families in a rural area that are producing large, then that would be encouraging to go there to produce a large family. And then there you are with.
Yeah, an ideal. And maybe that's out in the Midwest somewhere right now.
Well, part of our travels is to give a good look, and we probably will have some summary discussions and talk about.
I like to see you rank it at the end.
It could be cool, yeah. Huh?
Every little, even making notes of little towns you go through.
Sure.
Because that's not everybody goes on a trip around the country.
Yeah. So far, Chattanooga, Tennessee is the one that stands out the most in terms of how clean their downtown was. They had wider streets, tree lined, all the buildings are. So it's that, it has part of that broken window thing. One window breaks in a neighborhood, you don't repair it, you get more broken windows, and before you know it, the whole thing's down. Like, everything in that town was really impeccable.
Wow.
Yeah.
And nobody knows about it.
Yeah, Chattanooga is not on my radar, other than just a city in Tennessee.
Requires a little more research, but I'll just say from the drive-through, and we stayed, I don't know, near Chattanooga downtown, not too far away. But it was great.
You know, Omaha was a nice city. I visited there, like, College World Series 2006, and very ideal.
Yeah. So the reason I say this is because as much as we're going to cover some of the problems today, in terms of, I'd also like to cover solutions and how we see things. I think it's important to white pill, to give hope, and give some encouragement. because I do think the network's coming together. I think we're naturally building the able-bodied men. I think on the horizon, it's so possible that the system collapses on its own greed and deceit. I mean, it just takes too much time, money, and energy to prop up illusions and lies. So as it collapses, we're in a better position to help rebirth that which is reciprocal, truthful, due diligent, warranted, long-lasting, you know, the ideals that we have not only held before, but now have gotten clearer of how it's been eroded. Therefore, we can protect from that happening again.
Yes.
And if it's a short list of cities to send our brothers and sisters to and encourage them if they're going to make a move, then that's part of it, you know.
Yeah.
So tough topic, and I was broaching it a little bit earlier, Raleigh, multicultural, a lot of black and white intermarriage. How,
yeah,
there's a degree of acceptance, there's a media push for it, obviously. We've seen over and over in advertisements that they're doing. There's a conservative backlash to a degree. But you've seen some scientific stuff that it just doesn't work out well.
Well, on dating sites, there's still pretty high preference. Even, you know, everybody prefers their own race, yeah, as Morrissey said lately.
Yeah.
So the only place you actually see it common is just on TV and media.
Okay. But there's the making wrong part. Like if somebody, so you're saying on these dating sites, clearly people choose their own kind. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, totally ignored. And so if somebody says, well, I prefer my own kind, which they're doing on their dating sites.
Yeah, by their actions.
They're called racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By their actions, everyone would be called racist because of that preference.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody, but the majority.
Mostly so, white men would be called racist.
So how is it that the majority's actions are immoral?
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think we just become immune to being called racist, or is the fake news backlash that we could just go, well, you're just fake news, and
what is the solution? I think the solution, yeah, I think just...
Well, one is how to cope, because I think it's going to collapse is part of it. Their bullshit narratives don't hold water.
Yeah.
But kind of how do you, and I'll just say that for me, I've become more immune to the attack. Like it's empty words. It's an empty insult. Like, do you have something better than an ad hominem?
Yeah, it marks the person saying it as somebody who's just not very informed.
Yeah.
So why care about a slur from an uninformed, unscientific individual?
Right. Yet, there is the opportunity to teach, so to throw a quick link or an article or something that might, largely won't. And sometimes it's not even about informing the person who's arrogant and ignorant and won't learn or refuses, but the audience that's reading along and go, oh.
Yeah, and at some point talk to the audience, not to somebody who doesn't seem to be on the seeking truth. Mm-hmm. If they're clearly just a hostile person trying to goad you into saying something more extreme, just speak truth to the audience. Just be scientific.
Yeah. Dovetailing of that is IQ distributions. Have you gotten into this quite a bit?
Yeah, we're all equal, right?
Yeah. It's just one bar at 100.
Yeah, a lot of problems that people think are due to racism, and I think they're, once they find out that there's just a standard distribution difference, that explains everything. That explains the crime rate, homicide rate. It's like it's much easier to understand that we're not actually suppressing people. We're actually being less oppressive, and it's the IQ distribution that's oppressing them. That's their intrinsic.
So the counterpoint. Let's try a steel man argument. So let's try to enforce their argument as best as possible. They say that it is. It is systemic, and they just don't have the opportunities for advancement that the white oppressors have. Is that largely what their argument is?
It's kind of like a faith word, systemic. And I don't think it holds water.
Is there anything we could do to instill or make their argument stronger? How about, like, you could build your own commons and see how that works? Maybe that doesn't help. I don't know if I can help their argument.
I know black nationalists kind of push for that, to have their own, like, you know, black people hiring black people. But yet the theme still remains that they're not willing to look into what appears to be across, you know, multiple generations, the same exact bell curve distribution. Mm-hmm. Even though white people of incomes under 10,000 perform better on the SAT, I mean, kids from households of under 10,000 perform better than kids from black households that earn over, like, I think 70 or 80,000. So,
well, I thought of something that would probably help steal their argument is 1850 to 1950 was the greatest century for blacks in America. So post Civil War, you know, emancipation, freedom, they were able to build black only colleges, which still exist today. Yeah. We don't have white only colleges that I know of. There are black-only colleges. They had black-only towns. There were lawyers, doctors. They had their own banks.
The poverty rate was going down steadily.
They had a high marriage success rate. Mm-hmm. My understanding was in the 90%. So what I would encourage blacks to do is to look at their most successful time period and realize that it's when they were segregated. And so a white man wouldn't go into this neighborhood and feel particularly comfortable. I don't know the lynching rate for whites going into black neighborhoods, but obviously it's very publicized, the, you know, colored onlys and whites for the version of white towns where they're photographed. But there were equally dangerous neighborhoods, if you say dangerous, but just segregated communities. And it was their most successful time period. So that's how I would probably approach their argument, and say that was segregation, that was separation and speciation or specialization, and to prosper on your own. That would be the only way. Now, if there was IQ tests at that time, likely they would have done better. When you have dysgenic strategies, so that brings into the R and K, which would cover that a little bit too. So reproductive strategies.
I'd say for the most part, yeah, they're better off back then. Today,
seems we were better off back then too. We covered that early 1900s was peak. It's probably peak for the black community as well.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a statistic showing that there are more affluential, like on average. Well, now we judge success by, you know, money, not by family. You know, their families were healthy then, but maybe, you know, now there's Michael Jordan, Oprah, and what, Bill Johnson, a few others that they'll trump them out. But the family, the average black family is not doing too well. 70% born out of wedlock.
The percentage on homicide is huge. Black on black crime is huge.
I think it was still similar back then, though, to be honest.
Oh, and yeah. I'd like to know that.
Yeah. So how did they get to where they are today?
There is one systemic argument that would cover, this was Lyndon B. Johnson with the Great Society. Mm-hmm. So, of course, bringing out another socialized program provided more welfare for single black mothers. And that was kind of a death blow to the black family. Why they accepted it and didn't choose to maintain their own family and live within their means, whatever meager those were, they made the choice to take the handout. There was also the first blush of the drug war, which was criminalizing certain drug offenses, and my understanding was punishing blacks more for that. So it is highly likely that LBJ was a racist.
Yeah.
And that he hated blacks. And in particular, when he saw the success of blacks in the South, some of which these towns were doing better than whites, there was a backlash against that. There was also the ghettoization that was creating public housing brought them in. There was also a separation or early atomization of their family. And then I think the third was the media. This would be late 60s into the early 70s. You had blaxploitation films. They idealized the black pimp, you know, the hypersexual black man, and the hoe, the black, also sexualized black female. So certainly blew apart their narratives to just have a good family. And that was kind of embraced. The films were successful to that degree, that degree of wanting celebrity. It ties into now the most consumptive or hyper-consumptive is people of color tend to consume more, especially status signaling.
Versus saving.
Versus saving, yeah. So all of that does add to the steel man argument, which is to try to reinforce their argument of a systemic oppression. That being said, not only are there nuances, but there are clear time periods that the answer is what they are opposed to. We want, you know, if they want greater equality and desegregation, that's not particularly, it's actually wanting, doesn't matter what the equality is, you just go for the segregation, go for the separation, build it on your own, maintain it on your own. This would build all of their ability of agency, potentially would return the power of their family and maintain and see what happens that way. Because
so how do we bridge that? How do we get them back to that, to wanting that? It's tough because it's hard to go against a handout.
Right.
It's hard to turn it down, especially when every single one of their politicians that they're most likely to vote for is offering them. I know reparations is now being discussed.
Sure. Yeah, how do we? I certainly encourage the ones that I come across on Facebook that are woke and based, and I encourage them greatly. Yeah, keep at it. A documentary potentially could help, especially if they publish it on their own. I'd like to see what Louis Farrakhan is up to. You know, it could be black nationalists.
Yeah.
Movements of returning to Africa. Obviously, Africa is imploding on itself right now. China's coming in to scoop it up and teach them how to, you know, rule. It's like rule or be ruled. You know, we've covered that. And if they have intentions to build Wakanda, their idealized utopian state, they need to go do it. And that's not a force, like you have to leave. I think cities can maintain voluntarily societies that are totally mixed as much as they want to, as long as it's voluntary. And this came up before, the freedom of association is only as free as the freedom to disassociate. You have to have the negativa version of it. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother conversation that we have to make more mainstream, is that people have to be able to disassociate and not make that a bad thing.
Yeah,
that it's a choice.
You're not allowed to, if you're not allowed to not do something, that's the same as being forced to do it.
There you go.
So it's like, negative A, negative negative A is A, and it applies to free speech too. If you're not allowed to say something, you're in fact forced to say the opposite.
There you go.
So that's why free speech and freedom of association are so critical. And the founders probably should have emphasized freedom of association and disassociation just as much as they emphasized freedom of speech.
Seems like if they would have itemized every single one and been explicitly clear,
because freedom of movement, of disassociation, is far more important than verbalizing.
Yeah, and that's how we could win. The way I've seen it, you know, and they say it in life as well, is that, you know, the best revenge is to lead a successful life. So part of, I feel thematically in this, is that we're intelligent people. We can overcome this problem. We can overcome parasitism and lies. We can improve the Constitution. I understand that creating a proprietarian constitution or a constitutional reformation is all within our power to do. And that being said, where I get white-pilled and excited about is making moves in such a way that we are better suited to reestablish a harmonious meritocratic order where all peoples can, you know, play the game fairly, no parasitism, no lies.
Mm-hmm.
We can have better banking, get rid of the Federal Reserve. It's a congressional power to print and mint coin and currency that needs to return.
I think maybe cryptocurrency would just replace that organically.
I'm not sold on that. Why do you think that crypto could do it? Well, I see market competition. I get the value of letting markets compete and let the meritocratic winner rise to the top. I get that part of it, and I agree. But I don't see that the monopoly of money making and credit issuance at this point is ever going to give up its hegemony.
Well, now that crypto exists, the monopoly no longer exists. It's just a matter of spreading, making it more widespread. You know, it has all the features of gold, which we wanted to be the replacement for the Federal Reserve. So the market has the outlet now to potentially overthrow the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, there is a preference for Bitcoin to be the next monopoly, meaning that they throw out all the other altcoins. And now, hey, this is the supreme, everybody should go after this. And effectively, they're buying it with fiat currencies.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes a little bit circular at this point. If we don't cut the head off a Hydra, you know, it just could be another head, is my thought.
But another facet is we should reduce how much money we give these organizations that are ruining us. Find all the legal ways to pay as little in taxes as possible.
It seems that the tax situation should be pretty clear. Is it 10 or 20% is like the number? Like no matter how high they put taxes, like they consistently can collect 20%?
Yeah, it's...
Maybe it's 15. Anyway, there's a number that's there that no matter what they've done, it's relatively easy to collect this amount, and anything higher is always...
Yeah, I forgot that. It's named after somebody. Some economists discovered that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of taxes, but it's not the tax per se. It's more the wasteful... Like, I don't like the way they spend it.
Yeah, if it was spent in a way that improved the commons...
Protected the commons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it'd be more appealing. People wouldn't mind paying taxes if they saw the benefit in their community and in their life.
Right.
We don't. It's being used parasitically mostly.
What type of changes would be lasting and near permanent, you know, of peace, of being able to have peace and prosperity? I don't think the left or the right would turn away from that, but obviously media and interests that are profiting from chaos and discord don't want that. And I think that it's totally possible for us to find not just a centrist position, but we can do proprietarian left, we could do proprietarian right version, we could do a proprietarian central version. It's just all about eliminating parasitism and lies. And from what I know, anybody who's an honest liberal or progressive also wants to eliminate parasitism and lies. The right wants that. So this great awakening can also be a great healing.
That sounds very good.
Yeah. Right on. All right, Steve, it was great to chat with you and put another one in the books. I hope our friends enjoy it and give us any feedback, and we carry on.